You're listening to the Writer's Digest podcast with Gabriella Pereira, the show to help ignite your creative vision so you can write better and get published. Welcome, welcome, writers. From fiction to nonfiction, whatever your genre persuasion, be it shark thrillers written by marine biologists or upmarket literary novels about carts and horses, we're thrilled to have you here for another episode of the Writer's Digest podcast. This podcast is produced by Writer's Digest, the largest online writing community and educational website in the world. I'm Gabriella Pereira, founder of DIYMFA.com and your host for this show. Before we get started, I'd like to remind you that the show notes for this episode are at writersdigest.com/EP7 or EP7. Also, this episode of the Writer's Digest podcast is brought to you by Indie Lab. Indie Lab is an all-new interactive event for entrepreneurial authors, freelance writers, and independent publishers seeking to develop a publishing strategy, build a platform, grow an audience, and get paid for their work. If you're ready to move beyond the hustle and start publishing smarter, join the Writer's Digest team on September 29th and 30th in their hometown of Cincinnati for an insightful weekend of innovative strategies, actionable insights, and invaluable networking. Today, I have the pleasure of interviewing Barbara Powell. Barbara has been an agent with the Irene Goodman Literary Agency for over 11 years. She represents a wide range of fiction and nonfiction, and her client list is peppered with as many debuts as she has bestsellers. She is always looking for quality storytelling. Barbara currently writes the column, Funny You Should Ask, or FYSA, in Writer's Digest magazine, and it features her mostly serious but actually hilarious answers to author questions. Today, we're going to be talking all about the agent's role in the publishing business and in the author's career. So listen in while we dish about all things writing. Welcome, Barbara. It is so great to have you here today.
Thank you so much for having me.
So I usually start these interviews by asking people to share the story behind the story. But since we're not talking about a specific book in this episode, I thought I'd take a little of a different approach. So can you tell us your agent superhero origin story? How did you get started as an agent?
Well, first of all, sometimes I wonder if I'm the hero or the villain. But what I would say is...
Aren't superheroes kind of both, though? Like, really? The best ones?
Yes, exactly, right? Aren't we all such... We contain multitudes. I moved to New York out of L.A. in 2007, and I really targeted smaller boutique agencies. I knew I wanted to work for a smaller agency that had a little bit more hands-on approach, and I really targeted Irene Goodman Literary Agency, and for whatever foolishness possessed her that day, she clicked on the email and called me in, and it's like inviting a vampire into your home. Once I'm in, I'm never leaving. So basically, after the initial interview, I just harangued her and was a constant present. I was ubiquitous in her life. And finally, and she would agree to this, that she just called me one day on, like, I want to say Saturday afternoon and said, I can't stop thinking about you. You won't leave me alone. So clearly, that's one of the main attributes of being an agent. Do you want the job? And it kind of happened like that. So it was a little turnip trucky, came in from LA, totally determined to do this, and found the break and kicked it open.
I love it. And, you know, in some ways, isn't that sort of a model for what authors need to do too? Like that sort of persistence, maybe not, you know, that
level. Yeah, don't
level
do what of, I did. Don't.
Not quite that level.
yes, in some regards. However, in others, the kind of attention that you need to pay to the craft, technique, and detail of actually writing is just as important as perseverance. So in my mind, doing things like, I mean, not to just tout the company line, but having a subscription to Writer's Digest, attending the webinars of Writer's Digest, finding critique groups in your area, going to conferences like Mystery Writers of America, Thriller Fest, Romance Writers of America, there's Sisters in Crime. There's all kinds of helpful groups that you can be a part of that also raise the water level for your projects. In my mind, persistence is only after you've started your path. In the beginning, it is your job to create the best novel possible or the best nonfiction project possible.
Love it. And wholeheartedly agree. I mean, that's essentially the DIY MFA mindset and approach as well. And one of the things I love, so I'm a huge fan of your column, as I was gushing about before we started our interview. And one of the things I love is how you really tell it like it is, and you tell people like the, you know, the straight line kind of on the sort of the both the writing, but also this how to navigate the publishing side. But can you tell us how that got started? Like, how did you start writing this column for Writer's Digest?
Gosh, yes. Well, first of all, I'll say, and it's something I tell my kids all the time, lies are boring. Like, the truth is always more interesting. The harder the truth, the more fascinating it is. And I think any writer can agree to that. Maybe 5 or 6 years ago, I'm embarrassed to say, I don't even remember when this started. I was coming off the end of participating in a blog called Hey, There's a Dead Guy in the Living Room, a fabulous blog by Jeff Cohen. And I'm not sure if it's still active or if it has since closed down. I think it has since closed down. But I blogged on a specific day of the week. I believe it was Tuesday. I blogged on Tuesdays, every Tuesday for 2 years. And I kind of had the same irreverent tone as I have now. It was usually something in my personal life that I then related to what the writer's life is. That then caught the attention of the previous editor-in-chief of Writer's Digest, Jessica Strasser, and she reached out to me and asked me to write this column called, can't remember what the title was, but it was 14 questions you're afraid to ask an agent or something. And I just went nuts on it. Like, I said, do you want to open this can? Because you don't want to unleash the beast here. And she said, no, have fun. And it's still floating around there on the interweb somewhere. I would highly recommend it. Every once in a while, sometimes I go back and I can't believe they let me get away with some of the answers I put on there. But and after that, then Jessica was like, hi, do you want to do this permanently for us? And I said, sure. And then fast forward a couple of years later, Jessica asked me kind of off the record to take a look at one of her books as she was shopping for a new agent. And I took a look at it and I was like, and now I'm your new agent. I signed Jessica, so she had to rescind her editorial duties. So Tyler Moss edits me now. And Jessica is now my client. She's a fabulous author. She is on book 3. So it's strange how that worked. We became like a rat king of jobs together. Like, everybody was in charge of everybody else. So it was really interesting.
I love that. That is so great. And, you know, I had Jessica on the Writer's Digest podcast too. So, like, it's so cool to see how, like, her career is also sort of taken off in that direction. You know, so I'm sure that as you've been writing this column, you've probably seen a lot of this, and as an agent as well, you've probably seen a lot of the same stumbling blocks that writers run into, the same questions that come up again and again. Are there any that rise to the top? And if so, can you address them right now, like one or two of those sort of usual suspects?
I would say the usual suspects, it's kind of more of an umbrella statement. And it's something that right now, if any of my authors are listening, they cringe so badly when I say this, but sometimes I just bark, carts and horses, guys, carts and horses, because they're asking questions that are not applicable to the place that they're at in their career right now. And I think, you know, another thing that I really, just as a kind of life lesson, just live where your boots are. And yes, it's important to know what's coming next. And yes, it's important to have possible avenues of pursuit. But I think really staying focused on what's happening now. And if what's happening now is you haven't finished your novel, that's what's on your plate. You know, looking around the room and finding out who's represented by who and what are some agent possibilities to be querying, that's fine. But keeping your energy and keeping your boots on the ground of what you're doing right now, I think is important. So a lot of times I get questions, especially in person, I'll get questions about things and then I'll ask the questions leading up to that, like, oh, you know, I'm wondering, like, what is the average sale a week to do to have to get on the Times list? And I'll say, oh, well, how many copies are you selling right now per week? And they're like, oh, I don't have an agent. And I'm like, what are you doing? Like, we're not having that conversation right now. And, you know, again, I cannot preface anything I'm saying enough without saying craft technique and detail. Do your job. Do your book's job. Start there. And then after that, there are a variety of questions you should be asking, and we can definitely go over those. But finish your book to the best of your ability. Then what you should be doing is querying agents and querying them appropriately with a resume type query for your book. You want to be thinking like this is your book's first foray into an interview, and choosing agents that you know represent your genre. And the way to find those, there's a lot of avenues of pursuit of that online and in bookstores and in Writer's Digest and everywhere else. But most importantly, you can just sit in a library or a bookstore and flip to the acknowledgments section of books that are in your genre, and they should thank their agents. And you can start by making a list there so you know those agents represent books in that genre. So those are the first steps I would say that you're working on. And then you start querying. But anyone listening to this podcast or anyone working on the craft of their writing right now, that's usually where they're at. Would you agree?
Absolutely. And, you know, I love the carts and horses. Like I could just picture you doing that. And that's awesome. But, you know, it's interesting too, like, you alluded to, like, there are some questions that people need to ask. And this is one of those things that I often sort of when I have I think of it as like the freaking out writers. Like, you know, you go to conferences and you see all those writers like lined up to talk to agents and they're
all. What do you mean? Writers are the most stable people I've ever met.
But it's, you know, there's like all this sort of collective freak out happening. And often like what I find myself doing is trying to like, you know, calm people down. But there are certain things that I think writers do need to be thinking about that may not be like in the moment. So, and you alluded to those. So can you talk about what are those right questions? Like if instead of asking how many sales to get on USA Today list, what are the right questions to ask?
Well, one of the things I want to say is in speaking to that freak out, oftentimes why people are freaking out is they're not keeping their eyes on their own paper. They're looking to what their critique partner is doing. They're looking to what someone else in their writer group is doing. That person is ahead of them. That person, I'm doing air bunnies, got something already that they didn't get. So first and foremost is when the freak out's happening is whose paper are you looking at? Are you looking at your own paper? Because, I mean, worry is boring too. Like there's no need to worry. Worry is for second place. What you need to do is evaluate where you're at and ask the questions you need to be asking, which are in no particular order. Number one, am I writing something that is appropriate for the genre I'm writing in? Is it, I mean, I say this all the time, but is it a shark to a bear? Meaning, is it a shark, an octopus, and a bear all mixed together, like all different genres? Well, this is a romantic suspense with thriller elements, and I think it's a middle grade, but it also has some, you know, speculative elements as well. I mean, that is just a shark to a bear lurching through the streets of New York, scaring the children.
Do you remember that commercial, the puppy monkey baby commercial that was like in the Super Bowl a few years back? It literally scared the pants out of me. Yeah, it scared the pants out of me. But it's like that same idea. Like you're mashing like three things that should be adorable together and it's so bad.
Yes. And I think, and sometimes what authors might think is this is something that hasn't been done before. First of all, everything's been done before. Let's just go ahead and get that out in the open. Everything has been done before since, you know, early man and woman were tapping out stories on rocks and Morse code. Like this, everything has been told before. The end. You're welcome, America. You have no new story to tell. So it's about the way that it's told, of course. I mean, we've all heard the old adage. But for me, making sure that you know how to talk about your book. You know how to do the most important things are, of course, the log line and the elevator pitch. A log line would be, and I use this one all the time, great white shark attacks New England town over 4th of July weekend. Right? Like, you know what that book is. Like, it's perfect. It's a monster mashup with a small New England town. And then when you get into the elevator pitch, that's when you get into like Quint and Brody and the stakes at hand. And you're talking about the premise, not the plot. And I think of, remember when we were kids and the TV guide would have like that short little blurb about what the show was about?
Yeah.
Knowing how to talk about your book like that is important. And then I would say the questions you need to be asking, and these are all questions to ask yourself, comp titles. What else out there is just like your book? And I say that in the fact of like the readership is the same. Now, you can't say Stephen King, you can't say James Patterson, you can't use, you know, the big guys because those are phenoms. What you can do and what you should be doing anyway is reading in your genre and finding books that are successful and applicable to your genre while not being, you know, phenoms, while not being outliers within that genre. So knowing how to talk about your book, this is Sophie Littlefield's A Bad Day for Sorry meets Nick Petrie is The Drifter. So I'm like, okay. So I know that Sophie Littlefield has an older female protagonist who's kind of sassy, and Nick Petrie has a returning veteran protagonist, and both of those are kind of upmarkety. Sophie is more suspense and crime, and Nick is more thriller, but that mashup gives me the Venn diagram of what I'm about to get. So knowing how to talk about your book, having some comp titles, whether they're the titles themselves or the authors, very, very important. And you can use movies too. But knowing how to talk about your book, knowing the genre it's in, not writing a Sharkto bear, these are all important, but still, we're still stepping pretty hard into the craft part. After we get into the querying part and you get into talking to an agent, that's another list of questions, and we can happily get in that if you'd like.
Absolutely. We'll get into that next, but I wanted to go a little bit deeper with the comp titles because I think that's an area where a lot of writers often get tripped up. I think sort of the more obvious comp titles is when you sort of find a book, like you said, a similar readership that's in your genre. But have you found, like, have you had any examples of either your own clients or other books that you've seen where maybe the closest comp is not necessarily like within that same genre. It's maybe thematically linked or something like that. Like, how do writers handle it? Especially I'm thinking like for writers who are doing literary or something where it's more conceptual. And so then maybe their comp isn't like, you know, the other big literary novel that came out last year, but it's something that's thematically linked. So it might be in a different genre or even a different category altogether. How do you navigate that?
Yeah, everyone is let me just preface by saying everyone is a very, very special snowflake and their book is so unique and so fabulous. But again, you can definitely find other books like it, whether it's in concept or tone or approach. And, you know, here's what I'll say. I just signed and sold Don Bentley in the thriller arena. So now I like to use the word asset because Don is a former Army Apache pilot and I like to throw in as much Army lingo as I can to seem cool. But I'll tell you this, you know who your asset on the ground is? Librarians. Walk up to a librarian and say, hi, I'm an author. This is the kind of book I'm writing. Can you suggest some other books in this vein? They'll rattle off so many titles. They are your secret asset on the ground. Use them. You know, bookstore, especially, and indie bookstore owners too, and even, you know, some of the bigger chains, I'm sure you can ask them, but librarians, oh man, like going into the battle, I want a librarian on my left and an indie bookstore owner on my right. Like that's who you want.
I love it. That's so, yeah, so on point. So let's look ahead now. Assuming the writer has now handled all of these sort of craft related things, they've got this gorgeous book, they're at the query stage. What's next for them? What are the questions they ask at this next phase?
Sure. I want to tap dance back really quick. We're going to do a reverse time step. Here we go. I want to talk about the query. The query is really simple, guys. It's the hook, the book, and the cook. So the hook is that log line we talked about. You're going to put your word count and your comp titles in there in a single sentence with your log line. Then we're going to do the book. That's going to be 5 to 6 lines of premise, not plot, the little TV guide thing we talked about. And then we're going to do the cook, and that's you, and that's a bio. And all you have to kind of think about answering is, why me? Why this book? Why now? I don't care if you have, you know, 3 MFAs and a Pulitzer, or if you wrote this longhand on notebook paper while your daughter was playing in a softball tournaments over the summer. I just want to know a little bit about you. Why this book? Why me? Why now? That's your query. Bang, bang, boom, get out of there. Don't be pithy or cute. Don't write it in the voice of your character. For me, that's just, I'm kind of a funny person. And if you try to be funny and are not, I'm just like, so I don't want anything other than your best foot forward for your book. Your book can't talk to me yet. You have to do the talking. But so that is key to me, the query. Then the first 10 pages in the body of an email are what I look at. So sometimes I'll read that first log line and that's good enough to be like, oh, that's a genre I represent. That sounds interesting. And I'll skip all the query and start reading the pages. So after you've slaved over your query, just know that I sometimes skip it. But that being said, okay, so then you send out your query and your 10 pages to agents. And then you get a whole bunch of requests to see the full. And then you get that call. And just be prepared for that call because it can come at any time. I like to just appear in people's lives, which is very fun for me. Just like they're sitting there, they're yelling at their kid, they're stirring macaroni on the stove, the phone is ringing, and they're like, hello. And I say, hi, it's Barbara Powell calling from the Irene Goodman agency. And then there's this beat where they wonder, is this my critique partner trying to be funny? Or like, is this my cousin torturing me? And so I love popping into their lives and being like, I love you. I must have you. I will slay 1,000 dragons for you. I am outside your window peering in right now. The macaroni is burning. So I come at you full force. I come at you like an octopus falling out of a redwood. And then what will happen is you'll say to me, even though I'm like, let's do this, let's go now. Time's a wasting. Time is money. I'm going to scare you a whole bunch. Then you're going to say to me, I'm so excited. I have so many questions to ask you. You know, there's macaroni on the stove. The kids are here. I need to go for a second and gather my thoughts, and I'll call you back. I have a few questions. So that's what you're going to do. So you're going to go sit down after you get the kids the macaroni. You're going to go sit down and you're going to write down a few questions. And the questions are going to be really simple and really straightforward. You know, you're not going to ask me how I feel about the book because I'll be making it very clear. You're not going to ask me if I feel like this book has a place in publishing right now because I've made that very clear. Don't ask me if this book has a chance overseas. I wouldn't sign it if I didn't think it had a chance overseas. And don't ask me if I think it has a chance at being a movie. I wouldn't sign it unless I was going to be sure I could give it to my film guys to see if they think it can be a movie. So you don't need to ask any of those shop questions. You're going to ask me three simple things. You're going to say to me, how do you like to work? How do we communicate? Does an assistant communicate with me? Do I need to make appointments to talk to you, et cetera, et cetera? You're going to ask me, what is a current client of mine that you can speak to? That is very, very important because that client is going to be kind of your conduit. I mean, granted, I'm not going to give you a client of mine who's like, she is crazy. I think she day drinks and she once threw a punch at me. Like, I'm not going to give you that client. But what I am going to say is that you're going to be able to call that client and say, you know, ask some questions, and we'll get to those questions in a second. And then finally, you're going to say, how much work do you think this manuscript needs before submission? And that's really important too, because if you have other agents vying, you're going to want to really listen to what they think the book needs before they go on submission and if you agree with that or not. So those are kind of just the primary three questions you want to ask. You'll have a million more, and that's fine, but you just want to still be governing your book through the process. So then I'll say, hey, absolutely, you should talk to my clients. You should talk to Graham Brown and Sophie Littlefield. I'll just give you whatever. So then you call them and then you ask them two questions. You say, what is something that you feel that Barbara does very well? And then you're going to ask them, what is something that you feel that Barbara could improve on? Because that's where you're going to find out the real truth on if it's something you can really relate to. Because if Sophie says, yeah, she usually what bugs me is she usually takes like 3 or 4 days to return a phone call. That's not true. Basically, you can text me and I'll call you back. I have no boundaries, socially or otherwise. But that's going to give you some idea. And if one of the things is, you know, again, she day drinks and she wants to throw a punch at me, if you can roll with that, that's fine. But those are pretty key questions that you're going to be asking. But please, please out there, definitely ask to speak to the agent's other clients, because that's where the real information is on how they do business.
Wow. So much I want to unpack in there. So we're going to Let's like go back a little bit. First thing I wanted to unpack was the cook section of the query letter, because I thought it was really interesting how you talked about like sort of, you know, I totally agree with the like, why me? Why this book? Why now? I did have one question though. Let's suppose you have a writer and some element of their day job or of their career or previous publication credits aligns with the book they're writing now. Like, let's say they're writing like a shark book and they happen to be a marine biologist. Is that something they put into the cook, or do you really just want to keep it like, you know, very plain?
No, that's cook all the way. That's cook all the way. Anything that is relevant, because that would go into the, remember, it's why this book, why me, why now? That's the why me. Why I'm writing this book is I'm a marine biologist. You know, I graduated from Scripps University. This way, blah, you know, I find that the perception of the great white shark is vastly, you know, do your thing. But like, that's absolutely fine. The bio isn't just about your writing stuff. I mean, it could definitely be like, I have 6 kids and I was up at 4 a.m. and I wrote this, you know, every 4 a.m. over the last year for 1 hour from 4 to 5 a.m. I mean, I find that fascinating. But it can be, again, why this book, why me and why now? Because there's other, you know, and that can go to nonfiction as well, the why now, but there's all kinds of aspects that go into those three qualities.
And I think too, like the other sort of what I sort of heard as I was listening to that too, is to keep it very specific. I mean, I remember when I was in my MFA program, I was a reader for the literary magazine, and there was this one guy who would submit, and every time he submitted a story, his bio was literally, it was longer than the short story because it had like every single publication credit he had ever had. And the guy had like a 40-year career, which is incredibly impressive. But it got to a point where we were like, seriously, dude, seriously? You know, so I think that's the distinction, too, that I was hearing as you talked about that, is that it's about making sure the stuff you put in is truly relevant, as opposed to just being like a laundry list.
Yeah. And again, you know, going back to relevance, too, that word count and your top log line with your, you know, with your hook, that word count's important, too, because we were just now when you were talking about short stories, I was like, there's a lot of misinformation out there, especially if you just, you know, put down George R. R. Martin's last one and you're like, you know what, I could definitely crank out 130,000 words. That, you know, we want to be careful that that's another clue to me as an agent as well, as I'm looking at that and you say, you know, I have a high impact thriller, you know, complete at 45,000 words. I'll be like, no, you don't. Like, so it's really important to educate yourself on the word count out there as well and make sure your genre is the bullseye in that. Sorry, I just tap danced backwards to that as well. That was more like a grapevine. I grapevine sideways for that.
No, but I think that's super important too. So are there any places that people can go to find out what these word counts are?
Yeah, there are. I mean, honestly, the Googles, if you just put in, or the Bing or whatever the kids call it these days, I don't know, get off my lawn. You just can put in, you know, what is the appropriate word count for and type in your genre and it will pop up. I probably have roughly 7 columns myself based on that. One of my Writer's Digest ones definitely goes into detail on the word count. But just let's go real briefly. We're looking for on the adult side, 60,000 to 110,000 words, and 110 would be the tippy top, and 60,000 is usually the bottom. You can skim either way, but remember on your first time out, you might be the exception one day. You don't want to be the exception today. So at this point, you know, 70, 75,000 words for suspense, crime, etc. Thrillers can be knocking on the door of 95,000 words, but pacing is your goddess in these. And so you want to make sure that that's what the key component driving the plot is the pacing. And then we get, you know, anything other genre fiction, you know, romances can go the gambit as well, 80,000 to 100,000 words. When we get into YA and middle grade, it's kind of different counts, but you're still staying in that, in YA, probably in that, you know, 60 to 90,000 range, middle grade, you know, 35 to 60, et cetera. That's a deeper conversation for another whole podcast, but you don't want to get that much further over 100,000 and you don't want to leak that much lower than 60,000.
I wholeheartedly agree. And I definitely think the other thing too, like the one place where I think people can edge toward the upper end of that is in high fantasy. I think like in places where you're having that world building, like I totally agree when you're dealing with stuff where pacing is like a really big part, you're often on sort of that mid to lower end of those spectrums.
I agree to a certain extent, but that is the caveat everyone says all the time. And so there is this illicit permission that I've seen just get a little out of control lately. I don't represent high fantasy. I find that sometimes the problem with the word count is we're going so far into the world building that we're losing sight of the plot and we're losing the established momentum. And so for me, again, that perpetuates through the industry that, oh, except for high fantasy, oh, except for space opera. But then you're giving a novice writer the permission to go a little bit, fall too much in love with their prose when they should be really watching their pacing, character, and world development.
I hear you. I totally hear you. In some ways, it's more like, you know, once you've mastered the craft, you can expand into that area. People often do the same thing. They'll be like, well, J.K. Rowling's books are so flipping long she's writing YA. And it's like, yes, that was book 5, 6, and 7. Like she had a track
record. J.K. She's J.K. Like you don't someday. Yes, I would love for you someday be J.K. But at this point, you're not. And so, like I said, someday you may be the exception. Today is not that day. Let's get you on your path. And there are, of course, outliers, and there are books that I've sold that have been just phenomenally successful because they were outliers. But that is not the rule. That's the exception. I'm happy to welcome the exception into my loving arms where I will cradle and pet your head. But beyond that, let's be practical here. Let's start a business together. And the best way to do that is by a solid foundation. And the best way to create a solid foundation is by paying attention to the, say it with me, everybody, craft, technique, and detail of the writing.
I love it. So that dovetails beautifully with the questions and sort of that conversation that happens once you've sent your query letter and you get the phone call that you referred to. What I loved about that and what I wanted to unpack more is sort of this idea of sort of the author's position, because I think in sort of this whole process, because I think what happens, and this is where I see a lot of the collective freak out happening when I meet with authors or, you know, writers who would like to be published, like pre-published writers, is that they often are coming to it from this place of scarcity. And so whatever answer they get, yay or nay, there's like a moment, right? And yet one of the things that I find that the writers who do well is that they're sort of calm, cool, and collected, and they're weighing their options, or they're coming at it from a place of, you know, I'm meeting an agent who will be my colleague, my partner in crime, as opposed to agent up on a pedestal, like, you know, please pick me kind of approach. So what are some things that writers can, and I liked the questions, how you framed it, like this whole idea of talking to other clients, like that's what you do when you enter whatever business partnership. What are some things writers can do sort of to feel a bit more like they have a seat at the table, which they do. I firmly believe writers do. Like, that's the whole point.
I think I would like to change the conversation around what agents are. We are not gatekeepers. We are not. And I honestly, every query I open, I'm like, oh, please, please, please. Like, I want you to be my next client. Do you remember that scene in Christmas Story when she's like reading the reports and then she's like, terrible, this is terrible. And then she gets the Ralphie and she's like, hey, plus, plus, plus. That's how I want to feel. I want to be in a very large hat with a plumy feather screaming pluses and writing them around the circle of my office, because I want you. I want you to be brilliant, and I want to facilitate your art. It is my greatest humble privilege to be able to facilitate art and to enter in conversations that I normally wouldn't be able to enter into with based on the content of your book. So I am desperate for you to be brilliant. I am not scary. I have my butler put my pants on one leg at a time, just like you do. Everything about us is equal. So that's the initial conversation. I will say, when I call you to offer representation, you're going to hear a whole bunch of white noise, because it's something you've wanted for so long and somebody's saying it to you and you're not quite believing it, and it's a lot to take in. So do say, this is amazing. I'm so excited. Obviously, I queried you for a reason. I do have some questions. I'd like to assemble them. Could I call you back, or can I email you these questions? Just buy yourself that time and then sit down and go ahead, call your critique partner, call your writing partner, call whoever else you are in this battle with and say, hey, you know, Barbara called me. Can we go over my questions really quick? And you can decide, if you're a little rattled, you can just email me your questions and I will email them back, or you can email me your questions and I will call you back and we'll go down that list together. That happens all the time too. I signed Adrian Young, who wrote Sky in the Deep, which was an instant New York Times bestseller. What? No, it's fine. Thank you. No, thank you. And she had a whole list of questions that we went over a period of like a day and a half, because she had other agents, I believe, vying as well. And I didn't mind that at all, because of like what you said, it's the step you've been waiting for, but then you get there and you have no idea what the next step entails. And it can be very lonely. So you want to find somebody, like you said, right off the bat, who's going to link their arm in yours and say, let's follow this yellow brick road together.
Love it. Absolutely. Wholeheartedly agree. And, you know, this idea that it truly is a partnership too.
Oh yeah. It's the weirdest relationship ever. It's like, it's unlike any relationship you'll have anywhere else in your life. It's very weird.
So say more about that, because now I'm intrigued.
I mean, it's sort of like I am, well, so recently there was an election that some people got upset about. And during the next day, I would say maybe 8 or 9 of my clients called me and they said, I don't know what to do. It's just that when I'm upset, I call you and you usually have the answer. So I'm just calling you. And that just was such a clue to me that I become this oracle in some cases about what to do next on a career that, again, you don't know what happens next, but I've seen it. I've seen what happens next, so I can oracle your way through. But I think it also can be, you know, armchair psychology. You can say to me things like, this book isn't going well, blah, 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 and then I can start unpacking things with you and I can find out, oh, wait, you and your husband are fighting, and oh, okay, this is happening, and then we slowly start to get to the root of the problem. Like, the MacGuffin's never the problem. What's surrounding the problem is the problem. So I would say my job is armchair psychologist. I'm a work spouse. I definitely am somebody who knows the ins and outs of you very well. I've seen you really put yourself out there as best you can. I've seen you be hurt. I've seen you triumph. And I'm there every step of the way, rising and falling with you. It's a unique relationship, and one that is impossible to articulate unless you've been in it and been in a good one. Now, inversely, a bad agent relationship, I've heard, can be quite devastating and can be something that makes you feel even lonelier and even more confused. You should never feel like, oh, I don't want to bother my agent. I mean, you're never bothering me. I'll be like, you're bothering me if you are, or carts and horses, or it's Sunday at 2 a.m. You know, like, those are the times when I will tell you you're bothering me. But usually there's no such thing as bother, because we're doing this together. It's a nebulous thing sometimes facilitating art, and it's a relationship that needs that amoeba-like quality to spread into the cracks that need filling or need supporting.
Absolutely. Wholeheartedly agree. So once the agent, you know, once you've signed amazing author and it's now time to go, you know, you've worked, presumably you've done some reshaping on the book as, you know, based on one of the questions people asked.
Yeah, sometimes I'm elbows deep and sometimes I don't touch a comma. Those are rare occasions, but yeah.
So when you hit that next hurdle, the unsubmission hurdle, which is one that most writers, you know, sort of get, you know, that makes a lot of writers cringe, right? Because it's almost like you're going out with your book. Like first you went out with your query, now you're going out with your book. It's sort of like the whole query thing all over again. How do you shepherd writers through that phase? Because I've heard it's very painful.
Sure. We're going to change the vernacular from hurdle to saloon doors. So I'm going to go ahead and kick them open and walk through, and you just wait for me outside. And I know that's hard to do, but I'm going to go through the saloon doors. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to pitch your book. Now, depending on the genre and the relationships I've culled over my career, my decade, 11, how long have I been, 11-year career, sometimes it's I make a list of people and I call them and I say, check your inbox, you're welcome, and hang up. Sometimes I do a little bit more in-depth pitch, especially as if, like what you said, a marine biologist wrote this shark thriller. I mean, I want to talk to the people to say why this author, why this debut is a real standout, etc. And there's a variety. Sometimes I'm out with drinks with someone and I like them and I say, you know what, I have something right now. Why don't you take a look at it, etc. So usually I'll go, you know, to 8 to 10 imprints, editors at imprints, and then this is the part that starts to get nerve-wracking, is the editors start replying. Now, sometimes lightning strikes and everybody loves it and away we go. More often than not, I believe even the books that I've sold in an 8-house auction, somebody has passed on it for whatever reason. It can be simple as we have another book with similar content coming out on our fall list and we don't want to cannibalize it. Or it can be like, I didn't get this at all. And then 9 houses are in the auction for it and it's hilarious. But for what it's worth, somebody's going to pass. Let's just start with that blanket statement. And then after that, the conversation can go in a variety of different ways. Publishing is a game of Plinko. I can put the chip in at the top every single time in the same place, and it's going to come out at the bottom in a different place. A lot of things can happen, and we're going to get carts and horses all over the place here, but I will say, what you want to happen is you want within a week or two or three or four or 18 months, who cares? It only takes one phone call. Someone to call and say, I love this book. I totally get it. I have to have this on my list, and make an offer. Now, if everyone else passes, that's okay. I can massage that offer. If other people are like, yes, I also like this book, then I will set a close. And by setting a close, I mean, hey, I will tell everyone, I would say this in Polish, but I still think it would translate to profanity on air, but basically, are you in or are you out? But at that point, maybe 3 or 4 houses are in, and I set a close, and then bidding starts, and that's what the famed and mysterious auction conversation happens. Or one person shows up, and we do a deal, and you get a book published. And there's also the other side of the coin. I go to 27, 47, however many, I knock on doors till my knuckles bleed, and we don't sell your book. Guess what? That whole time that I was out selling your book, you should have been writing whatever you're supposed to be writing next. And then I will turn to you and I will say, what do you got now? I'm not in this. I don't sign anybody to sell their book. I sign someone to facilitate their career. I want us all to be at like a beach house in 30 years drinking Mai Tais. So in my mind, you better be writing because I'm out there selling. So maybe I don't sell your second book or your third. Or if you're Michelle Gable, who is now a New York Times bestselling author, maybe it takes your 5th book before I sell it. I don't care. If you're willing to stick it out and you keep producing high quality material in your genre and you don't give up, I'm not going to either.
So we've sort of walked through like the different stages of the author-agent relationship and an author career. And again, I don't want to get too cart and horses into this.
Carts and horses. Good job. See, now I got you saying it.
Now you got me saying it. But, you know, but there obviously there are some things that writers can not do in order to maintain their careers, certain common mistakes, both like things that might span their entire career, like that as early as like when they're first, you know, newbies going to writing conferences, and then things also that might affect them later on when they're already published. What are some of the things writers should be very careful about as they are building out their career in order to have a long-term career?
Yeah, I think I've already said it. Eyes on your own paper, that's key. Don't look around to see what other people are. Let's all do the air bunnies. Getting, that's key. Being aware of what's going on in your genre, in your industry, in the book industry as a whole is very important. I love having those conversations with my clients about that. be kind from the very beginning. Be kind from the very beginning. And then when you get your $1 million deal, be kinder, be even more humble. And then when you are number one on the New York Times list, just go one more level of humility. Dig down there. Be kind the whole way up. And when you stay at the top, still be kind. That's it. Keep your eyes on your own paper and be kind. That's all you need to be a professional author. To be a writer, that takes another whole set of skills.
You know, it sounds so easy. You make it sound super easy. And yet it's like, I know, because I've been in the trenches forever. Like it can be hard. It is hard. The whole eyes on your own paper thing can be very tempting not to do, but you're totally right. Like you got to keep your eyes on your own paper.
You know what I will say too, if you let your eyes go to someone else's paper and you want to call me, you can preface the conversation by saying, I let my eyes go to someone else's paper and just do your freak out with me. And that's okay. I get it. And you never know. You might say something that I'm like, oh, you know what? That is interesting. I wonder if I should call Mark Tavani and ask him if we can do that. You know, so to me, as long as you're self-aware enough to be like, I made the cardinal mistake of looking at someone else's career and getting immensely envious and jealous about it, that's okay. Just be honest about it. Remember, lies are boring. Honesty is always interesting. Just call me up, say, I'm having one of those moments. Papers are everywhere. My eyes are rolling across everyone else's desks. Help me out here. That's okay.
So I'm guessing that many of our listeners, as they've heard this conversation, have been thinking, OMG, sign me up. I want Barbara as my agent. Are you open for queries right now? And if so, where can listeners go to send you a query?
I am, but remember about the day drinking and the fist punching. But yes, authors can send me a query at barbara.queries@irenegoodman.com. barbara.queries@irenegoodman.com.
Love it. And you, the genres you generally represent, like in a nutshell, are?
Sure. I do 95% fiction, 5% nonfiction. And in my fiction, I do pretty much half and half younger readers to adult readers. Think of me for big genre fiction, commercial, upmarket, yeah, mystery, thriller, all that stuff. I do some literary.
Sounds fantastic. So I always like to end these interviews with the same question. If writers could, and obviously we've already tackled this in a million different ways, so you may repeat yourself, but if writers could do one thing to help themselves get published, what would that one thing be?
I'm going to circle back to something we already talked about, which was, if this was easy, everyone would do it. I'm not ever going to quit. So why would you?
Love it. That is just fantastic. So inspiring. Thank you. This has been awesome.
Oh, it's fun for me too. And I didn't swear once. I did so well. A couple times I stopped, but I did great.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for being on the show, Barbara. It is such a pleasure having you.
Oh my gosh. It was a pleasure to be here anytime. And we should do another show like about word counts and all that stuff and like the craft part of it. Because as you can tell, I love talking about that.
For sure. All right, everyone. That about wraps it up for today. Now stop listening and go get writing. Thank you for listening to the Writer's Digest podcast with Gabriella Pereira, founder of DIYMFA.com. This podcast was edited by Marielle Orff, and special thanks goes out to Samantha Sanders, Tyler Moss, and Jess Zafaris.